We bring you now The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth. Now here's the minister, Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr.
Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come into his presence with singing. Know that the Lord is God. It is he that made us, and we are his. We are his people, and the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving, and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him. Bless his name. For the Lord is good. His steadfast love endures forever, and his faithfulness to all generations. Good morning. And welcome to The Living of These Days. I'm Royal Shepherd, minister of Pilgrim Church, and today I'm going to reflect upon another of those fruits of the Spirit in the fifth chapter of Galatians. First, our choir, under the direction of Ray Baker, will sing, Worthy Art Thou. The letter of Paul to the Galatians is not, on the whole, the most inspiring work in the Bible, but there are some real gems in it, and one of them is that passage where Paul advises his readers to seek the fruits of God's Spirit in their lives. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I'm going to speak today about faithfulness. In a profound sense, we would be right in saying that there's only one fruit of the Spirit, and that is love. All the other fruits mentioned by Paul are so many varying expressions of the way that love unfolds in human life. The joy granted by the Spirit is the joy in the sharing of love. The kindness that emerges is a practical application of love. As we ponder any gift of the Spirit, it is important to keep in mind that all such gifts link up to love. Otherwise, they will lose their radiance and hang dark like a string of Christmas lights, short-circuited. Take the case of goodness, for example. So long as goodness is an outgrowth of love, defined in terms of how it serves the interests of love, goodness brings abundant life, the way it did in Jesus. But if we detach goodness from love and think of it only as a self-righteous observance of certain rules, goodness can become very unloving and oppressive. That's what Jesus saw happening in some of the religious leaders whom he met in his day. We need to see all the fruits of the Spirit as varying ways in which love goes to work in the world. And yet it is also true to say that without these specific forms of its working, love has no power. This truth comes home with special force in the case of faithfulness. Can love exist in any practical sense without faithfulness? I doubt that it can. Faithfulness is that power that sustains love in the face of obstacles. Faithfulness is that power that sustains love in the face of obstacles. There are many kinds of obstacles, of course. One kind is the inconvenience and hardship that arises from commitment to another person or to a community of persons. There is no serious relationship in life that does not entail such inconveniences and hardships. It is one thing to be a parent in the technical sense. That's relatively easy. But to be a faithful parent is another matter. To be a faithful parent means sitting for hours in the pediatrician's waiting room reading comic books. It means looking for glasses of water at 2 a.m. It means sometimes saying no, you can't have the car, and other times saying yes, and still other times worrying about which it ought to be. Being a faithful parent may mean you have to give up something you want, like a trip to Hawaii because of something your children need, like braces on their teeth. A faithful love always involves such nuisances and such sacrifices. Sometimes you hear young couples saying today that they don't want to have children for a while anyway because they don't want to be tied down. They want to do the things that they want to do while they are young enough to enjoy them. Now, some of us might have doubts about that way of thinking, but such couples, I think, are quite right in this respect. So long as they don't want to be tied down, then they have no business having any children. For a love that is faithful is a love that is willing to be tied down. And I guess we could say the same thing about marriage too, couldn't we? The same principle applies to communities of persons. Here too, faithfulness accepts inconvenience and hardship for the sake of love. The member of the choir who walks to church in the snowstorm because people count on him shows this kind of faithfulness to a community. The community may be as small as a family or as large as a nation, but communities prosper and endure only because they contain members who are faithful to them despite the inconvenience and the hardship. Another kind of obstacle that faithfulness confronts is other people's weaknesses. A faithful love does not demand that we submit passively to such weaknesses. It does require that we go on loving in spite of them. Now let's take the case of the man, for example, who likes to look at the late news on TV every night, maybe even the late movie. And while he looks at the news, he likes to be comfortable. He drinks a cup of coffee, he takes off his shoes and socks. His wife does not object to this habit. Perhaps the man is a floor walker in a department store. But what she does object to is coming downstairs every morning to the sight of socks spread out on the living room floor and another moisture ring on the coffee table. It is quite appropriate for that wife to demand that her husband pick up his socks the night before and put away his coffee cups and clean up the table and so forth. But people being what they are, such a man is likely to relapse occasionally. Faithfulness means that love persists despite such personal weaknesses, for nobody is free of them. Still a third kind of obstacle that faithfulness overcomes is change. Faithfulness means being true to what is essential in another person, even though in less essential ways that person may seem to be different. There is supposed to be a story behind the Irish writer Thomas Moore's romantic lyric, the song that is very familiar to many of us, "Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms." Like so many 19th century heroines, his fiancée contracted diphtheria and lost in the process much of her beauty. While she was convalescing, she refused to see Moore, but being an Irishman, he sent her a song declaring that though her charms were to fade like fairy gifts, she would still be adored. Did his love depend on her complexion? No, he wrote, "The heart that has truly loved never forgets, but as truly loves on to the close. As the sunflower turns on her god when he sets, the same look which he turned when he rose." Now, though he spoke with a far superior talent, Shakespeare gave voice to a very similar no when he wrote, "Love is not love, which alters when it alteration finds. Oh, no, it is an ever-fixed mark. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom." The loss of physical beauty is always a challenge to romantic love, but in our day, other kinds of changes try the mettle of faithfulness. We live in a time of immense social changes, which put a heavy strain on every kind of relationship. Now, these changes are not all bad. Many of them, hopefully, will result in an enrichment of human life. But even good changes can put faithfulness to the test. Some years ago, I met a fellow minister on the street who had recently been divorced. And he said to me, "How does marriage survive in the midst of cultural collapse?" Well, I suppose you could put the same kind of question with respect to the church. How can the church survive in the midst of such vast social, intellectual, and spiritual upheaval? Quick and cheery answers to such questions only fog up the situation. Right now, the fact of devastating change is much better established, I think, than the chances of any institution for survival. But if anything survives into the next generation in marriage or the church or in any other bond among people to which we are accustomed, survival will depend on people being faithful to what is essential in the midst of what is changing. Now, surely I have not exhausted the varieties of faithfulness or the kinds of obstacles that faithfulness encounters. But always I think faithfulness is the power that sustains love in the face of obstacles. It carries love through hardship, personal foibles, and the pressure of change. In its deepest reaches, such faithfulness is a fruit of the Spirit. It is nourished by God's faithfulness to us. But I am sure that Paul had something more in mind than faithfulness in human relations. In the very first words of this letter to the Galatians, Paul makes it plain how he thinks of himself. "Paul, an apostle," he writes, "not from men or through men, but through Jesus Christ and God the Father." Paul's very identity, you see, is defined in terms of this higher loyalty. He did not suggest that every Christian is called to be an apostle, not in that sense anyway, nor would he insist that the call to others might not come through other people. But he shared with his readers the conviction that every Christian was challenged to prove faithful to a higher claim, a higher claim that did not originate with people, but with Jesus Christ and with God the Father. Now we are living in faith-testing times. Old systems of belief fall away. Many of us can never return to the religious convictions, or at least the form in which the religious convictions were expressed, in which we were reared. Others of us began life in the seas of doubt and never really had any rather definite religious beliefs. And while we long for a place of safe mooring, we shall never return to the decaying ports from which our forebears set sail. The security of old orthodoxies is behind us, and the modernist revisions on which people in many of our churches were reared a generation ago, they seem to fall behind us too. They don't seem to work anymore. Substitute faiths abound. Group process gimmicks flow out of denominational headquarters like candy wrappers over Niagara Falls. But the big questions remain. In whom or what can we believe? Where can we find our God? What does that God require of us? Where is God leading us? These are faith-testing times, which is to say, these are times when faithfulness must walk through the darkness. How can we be faithful in times like these? One way, I think, is by keeping our loins girded and our lamps burning through prayer and worship. Only by affirming such faith as still shines within us can we keep kindled the larger possibilities of faith. Only by keeping the channels of communion open can we answer to the word that comes from beyond ourselves. Only by sharing with one another the small glow that we possess can we light up the world by faith together. That's why worship is so important, that people share in it together. Jesus told many parables about the importance of keeping ready and alert. Whether the master be present or absent, he said, we are under orders to keep that table laid. When the master comes, he will come wherever two or three are gathered in anticipation. Another way of keeping faithful is by living as those who are accountable. It's not enough to be true to ourselves. Sometimes ourselves are self-deceiving. We must try to be true to a righteousness above our own. The message of the scriptures is not self-fulfillment. It is rather keeping covenant with the God who made us. Not only are these times when belief systems fall, value systems fall to pieces too. One of the more disillusioning features of human nature is the way moral disintegration sets in when outward order is removed. After every natural disaster, after every great calamity, the looters prey like carrion birds upon their neighbors. In every war, invading troops of good mothers, clean-cut sons break every law they claim to be defending. And so it is that when the old arrangements by which people live together begin to totter, chaos beckons us. And sometimes we mistakenly call that liberation. Evelyn Underhill wrote that to be faithful to God, you have to be the kind of cat who can be left alone with the canary. Well, today the feeling is very widespread that we are left alone. And therefore, like Habakkuk, in the time of his frustration, we need to learn to live not only by our faith, but by our faithfulness. Even though we may be confused at times as to which way is right or best, we can live as those who know themselves accountable to one beyond themselves. We can do the right as we see the right, and trust God to forgive us when we do not see. Faithfulness is the power that sustains love in the face of obstacles. In this and every facet of love, our Lord points the way. His cross is here to remind us of that love which does indeed bear it out to the very edge of doom. O God, whose faithfulness extends to all generations, whose love gave life to us and continues to follow us into all the dark places where we may flee from ourselves and from you, help us to be true to you as you are true to us. Yet, when we prove disloyal, as sometimes we will, show us forgiveness and reclaim us for yourself. Let us take the model of our fidelity in Jesus Christ, whose faithfulness enabled him to show us that they who lose their lives in your service will find them in your kingdom. Amen. Two of our favorite singers at Pilgrim Church are Linda Polzin and Lorraine Langer. We hear them now in The Gift of Love. Many churches this spring are celebrating an event that took place 200 years ago. This was the founding of the first Sunday school by a newspaper editor named Robert Raikes in Gloucester, England. Now, those first Sunday schools were rather different from the ones that came later. Robert Raikes was appalled by the way in which thousands of children in his part of England in those times were compelled to grow up. 6 days a week and up to 16 hours a day, these little children worked in the textile mills. Often they slept there on the places where they worked. Most of them never learned to read or write. There was no opportunity for moral and religious nurture, even in the home. Indeed, they spent very little time at home. Raikes got the idea of holding schools on the one day of the week when the children were free from their labor. And that was, of course, on Sundays. At these Sunday schools, they would be taught to read and to write and other basic skills, and they would study the Bible, and they would be given some basic education in Christian morals. It was only some years later that the Sunday school was incorporated into the work of the churches. Today, we find that the Sunday morning schools for children in our churches often suffer because the commitment that people make to them is not very high. Attendance is very irregular, and it's rather rare that children traveling with their parents on a weekend will go to a church school in the town they are visiting the way they used to do years ago. Often people complain that there isn't enough time for their church to participate in the Christian education program. It makes us wonder then, I think, when we think of those thousands of children who crowded into the first Sunday schools after working from dawn to late at night, 6 days a week, who on that one morning that was free went to school that they might learn what was in the Bible. What might we do to capture again that kind of incentive? There's a question for you to think about. And now may God grant to you the courage and the wisdom for the living of these days.
God of grace and God of glory, on thy people pour thy power. Crown thy ancient church's story, bring her but to glorious flower. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage for the facing of this hour. For the facing of this hour.
You have been listening to The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, with Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr., Minister. For copies of today's sermon or comments on this program, please contact the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth, 55812. And please join us next week at this same time for The Living of These Days.